Okay, we'll begin the final material, 1848 to 1877. And I'm going to try to just cover those things which we need to know for the final, which means that 1 through 11 you need not know. It's exciting stuff, but not on the test. Pardon?
What number are we starting at?
We'll start at number 12. It says D. Wilmot, Pennsylvania. Does that fit everybody's first sheet? Number 12, where it says it's David Wilmot, Pennsylvania, Wilmot Proviso.
Yep.
And I have little circled notes to myself to be sure to tell people things. And the first thing it says, be sure to tell people to know the border states. So I might as well say that now before I forget later. When we say border states in the Civil War, what do we mean?
The line between the three states.
Yes, the states that were... Technically, in fact, that map's very good for us there because the green kind of, I hate to use this phrase, baby droppings color states there. More like Gerber baby food colors, like that. Missouri, Kentucky, you're right, it does. Missouri, Kentucky, West Virginia, Maryland, and Delaware all are the border states. What do we know to be true about them? What makes them, because you made a good point, they are south of the Mason-Dixon line. Yet they're still unique in some other way. What's that? What makes them unique from the blue and the pumpkin color? Yes? Sure. They are Maryland, Kentucky, West Virginia, Missouri, and Delaware. They are slave states, but then so was Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, or not Oklahoma, but Mississippi, Alabama. So what's the difference? They did not secede. They stayed loyal to the Union. So while they are south of the Mason-Dixon line, thus they are slave states, they were slave states that never did secede. That strategic, or that uniquity of those states makes a strategic importance to the war for Lincoln. A lot of what the Lincoln policy, especially in terms of emancipating slaves, will be based on trying to not lose those states. So when we get up there later, you'll see how it's of importance. So starting with number 12, what's going on in 1846 in America? Where did we leave off at in 1846? You recall what was the major event of that year? There's many events, but there was an election in 44, another one in 48. It's probably a midterm election. California will discover gold in 48 after that. And not only that. Yes. And what did that come? You're right. The acquisition of Texas, Oregon, New Mexico, California, Utah. All of that came about as a result of what? The Mexican War. That's it. And that's what's going on in 1846 is the Mexican War. This is where we pick up on number 12. It is early in the war. It is before it is decided. David Wilmot is a Pennsylvania House member, a congressman, who is adding a rider or an addenda, kind of like a, we call them earmarks today in today's politics, an earmark to an appropriations military bill, which would say, in fact, kind of this relates to current times, because what's the fight that the Democrats and Bush are having right now over funding? War funding. Democrats want to put strings attached to it. They want specifics. They want timetables, et cetera. And Bush wants an unattached, just a blank check, so to speak, in order to run things the way it needs to be without any Democratic meddling. Wilmot was doing this to this war bill. He was saying that, in addition to funding the war, let's add a statement that says any new lands that may be acquired from Mexico, and we know lands did get acquired, the ones we listed over here, any new lands that were acquired from Mexico be banned from slavery. Well, how do you think that was received? In fact, Wilmot, when he put it forth, made comments to the effect of, like, let's show the world that this is not a land grab for slaveocracy. This is something defending American honor. This is not. We're not going to taint this or stain this by having slavery spread. How do you think that was received? Well in the North, horribly in the South. Because just as Henry David Thoreau and Lincoln and others had stated this was a war to spread slaveocracy. It was exactly what Southerners wanted. The last thing they wanted to do is agree to a ban on that territory. And that brings open the question of just what is the legal status of slavery in territories. And in this debate, as we move to number 13, John C. Calhoun, who was dying of throat cancer, unable to stand, had a fellow congressperson deliver his message. And that message was, if you look at the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, it is illegal to ban slavery anywhere in the territories. Now, when a state becomes a state, if they want to ban slavery by their state constitution, the Congress gives them the authorization to do that. But as long as something remains a U.S. territory and is not under a state government, their government is the federal constitution. And the Fifth Amendment makes it illegal to ban slavery. Now, where in the Fifth Amendment do we find the protection of slavery? Due process would tend to... for whom? Due process for whom would be the question. It's in the same phrase as it talks about due process. You can't be denied due process, nor can you be denied your... They're building a road through your backyard here. Property rights. You cannot be denied your property. So what Calhoun's arguing is that slaves are property. And to deny people the rights to their property in the territories violates the only charter that governs the territories, the Constitution and the Fifth Amendment. Well, Northerners, of course, were not going to buy that argument whatsoever. They sallied forth back with the comments that not only can Congress ban slavery, it's already done it. Historically, where? Pardon? Missouri, yes. If you want to go pre-Constitution, which has no legal bearing, you could say they banned slavery in the Northwest Territories as a result of the Northwest Ordinance. But even past that, the Missouri Compromise banned slavery in all of Louisiana Territory north of the 3630 line. So everything north of, when this was still part of the territory, north of Missouri, north of Oklahoma, all that area was banned. So there's a precedent. It already has been done. And if it hadn't been done, even if there was no precedent, they argued, it could be done through the Elastic Clause. So here's two sides to this debate. You can't ban it because it's property. You can because it's already been done, and you could through the Elastic Clause. And then there were some middle opinions, those who said, let's not tear ourselves apart in the middle of a war. We should be working in common cause. There are other alternatives. One could be extend this line. Extend this line all the way out to, at the point they're talking, they meant California coast because California was not yet acquired. So in 1846, they said extend the line all the way to the coast, everything north of it expands, just like Missouri. Everything south of it is guaranteed, just like what's left of Missouri. There's no more land. Fight over, divide it, that's it. That'd be a solution. Another solution that moderates proposed was, why fight it out now? Let's wait until people move out there. And if a majority of people who move out there take slaves with them, they'll turn that territory into a slave state. And if the majority don't, they'll turn it into a free state. It's local, it's democratic, and it sure doesn't have to be fought out now. That idea that I just expressed there, we've talked about earlier. Do you recall when and how? In the 1848 presidential election, who was the Democratic candidate? Cass, Lewis Cass of Michigan. And Cass had enunciated a concept called squatter sovereignty, which was exactly that. Whoever gets there first eventually decides. The concept of squatter sovereignty would eventually evolve into what's called popular sovereignty by Stephen Douglas of Illinois. So when you see Stephen Douglas enunciate popular sovereignty, that is the same as the squatter sovereignty concept that Cass would enunciate. The great advantages of both concepts is you don't have to face it now. You put it off into the future. So that brings us down. So we need 12 through 15 there. 16 is not itself on the test, but without 16, 17 won't make sense. We need to do it here. Mexican War is a victory. The land is acquired through Guadalupe Hidalgo. And as you know, gold is discovered in California in January of 1848. And by 1849, News of the gold reaches around the world. 100,000 people migrate to California. Many make it, strike it rich. Many do not, but most stay, one way or the other. So you have nearly 100,000 people now in California. What's the usual minimum for a state? 60,000. So you've got well enough for a state, and they want to be a U.S. state. They want the sovereignty and the privileges that come with statehood. And as they entreat Congress to be admitted as a state, they're obviously going to be what kind of state? Free state, because there are very few slaves, if any, were brought into California. Well, this upsets Southerners, because if California enters, let's look at what's going to happen. They know that there's migration going into Oregon already earlier. It won't be long before Oregon comes into the Union. Kansas is an area that's filling up slowly, but it's something that could become likely a free state. You don't see a lot of cotton growing in it that far north. Iowa and Minnesota, which we'll come in later, were in parts of this entire region that the Dakotas is filling up. So the people began to wonder, in the South, they began to wonder, is every new state going to be a free state? If so, what happens to our position in Washington? We become a minority interest, and it won't be too long down the road where if all the Western states that come in are free states, they could propose a constitutional amendment to ban slavery. We could every one of us vote against it and still lose and lose our property. So this is as early as 1849, 1850 that these thoughts start to run through Southerners. And as it says here in item 15, or 16 rather, there was a group of Southern extremists who met in Nashville, Tennessee, called the Fire Eaters, and they already called for secession, or at least they called for threatened secession. In some ways, it's kind of like when people would threaten nullification. The threat's far more important than really carrying it out if you get your way. Yes? Fire Eaters. Extremists who said that unless we can slow down the influx of these new states, like California, there's no reason for us to stay, we'll secede. Well, you'd see what happened to Texas over 9 years' time when they wanted to be a state and was delayed, and then they flirted with Britain. Now, California's even farther away and way too valuable to let sit and wait and wonder and flirt with Britain. So politicians began to move on what can we do to get California in as a state without it causing Southern secession. And as a result, in item 17, the Compromise of 1850 is struck. These three names work on the compromise. Henry Clay, who's still around, he'll die in 1851. Stephen Douglas, a younger politician who will die in 1861. And Daniel Webster, who will also die in 1851. So two of these three people are at the end of their career. This is their final move politically nationally. Clay is from where? Well, that's Calhoun. That's good memory, though. Kentucky. Clay is from Kentucky. And what makes Kentucky a bit unique to the nation there?
Its shape.
Its shape, yeah. Thank you very much. Well, I think the main thing I want to stress here is that it's has slaves, but it also has areas that are very much yeoman farmer. It has some cities in the east. It is close to Chicago. It is a state that has, to some degree, a little bit of all the nation in it. And that's why Clay tried to fancy himself as being the national politician, almost kind of like, remember when, who was that guy? Big guy in Atlanta, the TV station, cable news network, Ted Turner. Ted Turner tried to make the Braves America's team. No, it's because he had cable control. I think Clay tried to be America's politician. You know, I can solve everybody's problem with a compromise. Can't get elected president, but I can solve compromises. So he's the one that takes the lead one more time after having completed the Missouri Compromise of 1820 and the Compromise Tariff of 1833. One more time in his life, the year before he passes, Clay is going to put together one more compromise to get California in, this 1850 compromise. So he's from Kentucky. Where is Webster from?
I guess.
A little farther north. Started in New Hampshire, moved to Massachusetts, right. And then the last politician, Stephen Douglas, like I mentioned already, he is from where? If there's going to be famous Lincoln-Douglas debates going on, he'll be from Illinois. So, Illinois, Kentucky, Massachusetts, these are the three people who crafted compromise. They're the three people who want to compromise. When you look at the map, what's missing? Who's missing? Not what particular person, but a person from where?
South.
Deep South is missing. Which, what does that tell you? I always get this wrong. Every time I ask this question, never get the answer I expected.
They're already losing their voice.
The South's already losing their voice? I've heard that one before too. I just must have a. Why is there no representation? Say at your workplace, there's a compromise to decide what to do with some of the workspace. And everybody that's chasing after this compromise is on the left side of the workplace. Nobody on the right's standing up or saying anything. I just must have this totally wrong. It works wrong every time. What I'm trying to imply is none of the Southerners wanted this. They don't want California as a state. They don't want a compromise. They'd just be happy with California doesn't come in. So these definitely Northerners or nearly Northerners, Kentucky, are chasing after trying to please Southerners in order to get California in. Because Southerners, and if you think from a Southern perspective here, rightfully believe there's no great advantage here. There's nothing they can trade us which equals losing the balance of states. You let California in, you're going to have to let others in. It's a camel's head under the tent theory. So that's why these others are trying their hardest to come up with something that'll please Southerners. A five-part omnibus bill, as number 18 shows, will be put together. The parts that bill include are on 20 on the next page, A through E. Part of that, and we'll come to those points in a moment. I want to talk about some other material first.
So we're not doing 19?
We will. But that's a good thing. When I go past one like that, see if I need them to mark it off. But I was jumping over to 20 to say this is what we're going to be talking about. Part of the coexisting argument and gift to the South in this compromise will be what to do with these lands. We're still dealing with the can slavery exist, can slavery be banned, et cetera, question. California is going to come in as a free state. This is more likely than this to be an area that will be settled since people were coming from Texas, since people not over here yet. So a debate arises about should this area be banned or should this area be open to slavery? And a lot of people are still taking the Wilmot position. We should definitely ban that area. Daniel Webster. Daniel Webster, throughout his career, he hadn't been a fiery abolitionist, but he had been clearly against slavery. That had been his ethical position in politics. And you had to be from Massachusetts, because Massachusetts is a hotbed of abolitionism. But he was by heart also. He makes a speech on the 7th of March, the famed 7th of March speech, which probably did lubricate the compromise into succeeding, but also left at the end of Webster's life a real stain in the eyes of many of what happened here. He said this phrase, and this is a paraphrase of the phrase, but it's close enough. Why are we arguing? Why are we debating and fighting over the imaginary Negro in the impossible place? I think I've shared that with you once before. That comes from this speech. What does he mean? Why are we, on the issue of whether to ban or not ban slavery in that area, why are we debating over the imaginary Negro in the impossible place? Yeah, there's no slaves there, and the likelihood of slaves ever moving there is very thin, because if you've been there, it doesn't seem to be the same kind of climate and soil for cotton growing. So what he's really meaning is, if you tell the Southerners, yes, that area can be open for slavery, you want to guarantee it? Sure, guarantee it. Make it popular sovereignty, whoever gets there first, either way you want to go at it, why not give the clue to Southerners that they can take slaves there, therefore you give them something and they'll agree to California coming in. So this is this Janus phase two, you know, talking on both sides of the mouth politician working here. The Northerners, he'll say, let them have the right to move slaves into the desert, which will never happen, and we will get a concrete free state and maybe more out of the deal. Then he'll say to Southerners, if you agree to this, you can turn this into slave states with the North on your side supporting it. Well, it's a strong enough factor that it causes the compromise to succeed, but those who had been loyal followers of Daniel Webster saw it as the great ethical sellout. He'd been anti-slavery, and now he's actually going to give the opportunity and the possibility for that to happen. And when we get closer to the war, in 1860 December, there will be, in fact, I'll tell you what number it's on, if I can jump over and find it. Number 44. The Crittenden Compromise will come back again and deal with this same issue about slavery where it can't exist in the impossible place. Well, as I said, back to 18, a five-part omnibus bill. It was set up in such a way as to where it's really not one bill, but five bills that have to be approved by five different times through the president. The plan being this. We all here in Congress know that this is a bill that must get through, all five parts must get through. But if you find yourself afraid to vote for a given part because people back home are going to be mad at you for voting for or against slavery or for or against California, whatever, just don't show up and vote. You only vote if you're voting for it. Don't vote against it. We'll do that on all five parts. Everybody has a clean voting record. Everybody is happy and gets along fine. And after half a year of negotiating, they had it all put together. They just left one party out of the discussion, the president, which was Zachary Taylor. Now, the reason they thought Taylor would be on board with this is because Taylor had been a slave owner himself from Louisiana and the many places he'd lived, and so they thought he would be sympathetic to Southern interests here. But Taylor, as a president, surprised them by saying, I will sign those bills I agree with, and I'll veto the ones I don't. Which they said, you can't do that. You start signing some and vetoing others, we've got a nightmare on our hands. We've got people seceding and everybody's trust has been broken down. You got to sign them all. He says, well, I'll sign what I want to. I'm the president. And so that's the impasse that had occurred as July 4th approached, 1850. People celebrated the Independence Day, including Zachary Taylor, who celebrated a little too hearty. Ate lots of ice cream, cherries, milk, watermelon. He got a sick stomach, and within a couple of days, died of what was the books say, chlorenteritis. I'm not sure exactly what that is. And who was vice president? You know, Millard Fillmore, who was from New York, who people thought would be against this compromise, but he was fine with it. And so when he was inaugurated president, he said, bring it on, I'll sign all five parts, and he did. And so the crisis of early secession, which may have happened had Taylor started vetoing bills, never occurred. And it seemed to be one of those lucky turning points in American history, at least lucky if you want to delay a civil war. But the yes, Millard Fillmore of New York, yeah, who will be a third party candidate in 1856 for a racist party later, but we'll talk about that later. The Taylor family didn't see it as so fortuitous or lucky. The Taylor family claimed he was murdered. And for generations, the Taylor murder was what was talked about. And finally, if you all recall, do you remember when David Letterman, before he was on at night, he was in the daytime in the mornings? In the early 80s, was it? Or early 90s, like about 1990, 91? Well, during that time, when he was on, the family finally got a court order to dig up the remains of Zachary Taylor and check for poison. Remember this? And the court order went through and they dug him up and checked his bone marrow and no sign of poison. To which the family claimed, see, they used a type that vanishes. But for all intent and purposes, that rumor was put to rest. So let's look at the five parts of the Compromise of 1850 that went through. A, California would enter, this is number 20, California would enter as a free state. The New Mexico and Utah territories,
which is this area, New Mexico territory, including Arizona, New Mexico, Utah territories, would be Nevada, Utah, and parts of Colorado and Wyoming.
Okay.
you know the map. You know America.
Those areas would have no restrictions on slavery. That doesn't really answer the question, is slavery legal or not? So what it really implied without saying it was popular sovereignty. Let it be decided in the future by who moves there first. No restrictions in the meantime. If the people who move there later want to turn it into a free state, that'll be their option. Next. Sure would be nice if we could find that map.
The changing of the California boundary. Here's the reason why.
The Texas government had borrowed and had defaulted on $10 million worth of loans to New York banks. The banks wanted to be paid back. The Texans didn't want to pay it. So a side compromise within a compromise was struck, and that is the U.S. government will assume and pay off all the bank debts for Texas. The Texas is the size of Trump.